Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be in, however you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb, in for Colin Cowherd. And if you're listening to us on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app, or downloading this as a podcast, wherever you may be and however you may be listening, thanks so much. We're live in Los Angeles. It's beautiful. It's sunny. We have a defending World Series champion, defending NBA champion, and a team in the Final Four? All right, we'll get you ready for the Final Four. Tim Miles is going to join us. Former head ball coach at Nebraska, at Colorado State. He's going to join us, and we'll preview the Final Four. Plus, John Middlecoff will be our guest till 3 and Out. An hour from now, we'll get his assessment of the quarterbacks and of what the Niners will do, what the Patriots may do. Plus, Adam Morrison, Ammo, as he's known. Of course, a legend and a two-time NBA champion, All-American at Gonzaga. Adam Morrison will join us as we are, 30 hours or so from Gonzaga playing in their second Final Four and a couple days away from potentially crowning Gonzaga a national champion. They are the favorite from David to Goliath. That's how this thing has changed. All right, but let's start with this. Mike Lombardi, who, personal friend, I have family members that have worked with Mike Lombardi. Love having him on. I really like his book, right? Which is about how to build football teams, and draws back on his memories of working with the great Bill Walsh, as well as with Bill Belichick. Mike Lombardi wrote this in The Athletic, quote, when the 49ers trade away 2 firsts and a third to move up 9 spots in the draft, they made that move based upon the conviction of one man, their head coach, Kyle Shanahan. No one in the building has enough knowledge or understanding the quarterback position to sway Shanahan away from selecting his guy. Kyle won't be wishful thinking. His informed expert opinion will be rooted in what he believes is essential for the quarterback position. This is his pièce de résistance. This is his defining moment. You know, it's interesting. If you mention Magic Johnson in this town, I still think most people can draw back on, God, he's the greatest Laker ever. And I know that Magic said Kobe was. What are you going to say? What are you going to do? The Ricky Henderson, I'm the greatest Laker ever? Like, you can't really do that. Magic's the greatest Laker ever. Right? He won all those titles. He captivated the attention of the entire city, heck, the entire globe. Like, he and Larry Bird saved the NBA. And it wasn't Bird's play and that it was black versus white, Lakers versus Celtics, but really Magic's personality. His ability to make everybody happy and somehow make it all work and win games. Like, Magic was amazing. But his defining moment is not signing LeBron James to the Lakers, which happened. It did happen. Like, Magic, we can say LeBron already wanted to come. That's not wrong. He would likely have come. But the defining moment was when he selected Lonzo Ball. Because if there's one thing that Magic Johnson should know, it's how to select and evaluate a point guard, right? He was one, especially one as a great passer. No one can appreciate and understand passing a basketball and leading a team much like Magic Johnson. And I know you're going to get to the, well, Lonzo's actually had a good year this year. It's fine. You know? He is going to be a good NBA player for a long time with some special gifts and some limitations. He is not going to be what he was billed to be. And because of that, it becomes a defining moment. It wasn't just that he was picked number 2 overall and they passed on others at the same. Donovan Mitchell came through their through a workout, and the coaches raved, this guy's better than Lonzo Ball. And De'Aaron Fox came through, and they're like, this guy's better than... Nope. Magic said, this is my guy. Magic's the point guard. Magic understands passing. Magic understands L.A. The kid's from Chino Hills, which is sort of L.A., close enough, right? Makes sense. Abject failure. Okay. Now you look at Kyle Shanahan. And do I think John Lynch has a big hand in all of this? Of course. I think they work hand in hand in a lot of their roster acquisitions. And the truth is that Lynch and Shanahan deserve respect for building an incredible football team. Look, when they were healthy, and were they were actually helped by Jimmy Garoppolo's injury 3 years ago, right? Because if Jimmy G, that year, that team would have been a playoff team or pretty close, at minimum, you know, 7-9, 8-8, 9-7, like every team, right? Instead, they win, I think, 4 games. Think maybe we'll look that up. It wasn't good. They got the second pick in the draft. And because Arizona decides we're going to take quarterback second year in a row, Nick Bosa fell to them. Now, Nick Bosa got hurt last year. Okay. But Nick Bosa in the Super Bowl was the best player on the football field for about 3.5 quarters. He's that good. He's that good. And then, oh yeah, by the way, they also, in the second round, like one of the things about drafting high in the draft is it's not just the first round. You get to draft early second. They got Deebo Samuel, who's an unbelievable talent where he can run it on end of rounds. He can catch it. He can block. He's a big bot. He can do a little bit of everything. So first, they've been able to benefit from some of their injuries. Second, they've done a good draft and a job in evaluating and drafting for the most part. For the most part. Has been perfect. All right. And it's not their fault that Jimmy G kept getting hurt. But when you... Listen, Kyle Shanahan's been very good. He was obviously raised in a football film room. He played in his own right. You know, he's Chris Sims' roommate. He's a wide receiver at Texas. Went right into the family business. Worked his way up in the National Football League. And the guys that worked... And he can identify. Look, I don't need a guy who runs a 4-4. That doesn't do me any good. He's had a guy who ran a 4-4. He had RG3. And by the way, RG3 was rookie of the year with an offense that he didn't like, that Shanahan didn't like. But they put in because it was easier for RG3 coming straight out of college to run similar stuff. And then slowly they wanted to make him into more of a traditional Kyle Shanahan sort of quarterback. Didn't work. Yes, did RG3 have success and then get hurt and he was never the same after he got? Fine. But the fact is that the lesson that Kyle Shanahan learned was, man, you're not taking a spread guy and making him a Kyle Shanahan guy like that. That's a hard one. But he's done his best with guys that other people didn't think had the arm, had the legs, had the full package. Matt Ryan was a quarter away from winning the Super Bowl. He was the MVP of the league. Kyle Shanahan was calling the plays. That's his type of guy. Same thing with Kirk Cousins. His type of guy. Matt Schaub, his type of guy. But boy, when you hand select, when you move mountains to move up into the draft, when you, whatever he thinks their relationship with Jimmy Garoppolo is, there's zero chance that it's a good one in Jimmy Garoppolo's mind. Like, you're like, well, Jimmy wasn't happy, but he's motivated. Like, Jimmy's pissed off. Right? Jimmy was just hurt. Last time Jimmy was healthy, they played in the Super Bowl. He was the quarterback. Zero chance. So you have destroyed that relationship. You've also destroyed any sort of trade value for Jimmy Garoppolo because everybody knows you're taking a quarterback, right? You've gotten rid of other draft picks. You moved up in the draft to hand select one guy with a ready-made team. And you could say, like, well, we're going to try and do the Alex Smith thing. Like, that worked sort of once. And they also happened to get Pat Mahomes. My point is that while it appears like, hey, this guy, he seems to know what he wants at the quarterback position. We do know that Kyle Shanahan was the coach when they traded for Jimmy Garoppolo, played Jimmy Garoppolo, won the early games with Jimmy Garoppolo, gave Jimmy Garoppolo a big contract, right? He's the same guy. Now, does that mean he was hand-selected, that they moved up in the draft? No. But no one forced them to make any of these moves, and he did not inherit Jimmy Garoppolo the way that Sean McVay inherited Jared Goff. So, I'm just sitting here and looking at it and saying, you better be right. Has he earned this right? Of course he has. He's done a fantastic job. But you better be right. Because if you miss on your eval, you never live it down. You never live it down. I mean, look at what's happened with Ryan Pace. Just, do you guys, if I had to have you guess, just guess, you have Ryan Pace, and you have, what's my man's name with the Colts that Colin talks about nonstop? Chris Ballard, okay? Ryan Pace and Chris Ballard. In the last 3 years, who's done a better job? I mean, I think everybody would be like, man, Colts, Chris Ballard, awesome, right? Same record. Same record. And both, and the only difference is the Colts have one playoff win as opposed to the Bears, and the Bears had a double doink. Otherwise, they make the playoff. They win the playoff game. But what is the difference? What is the difference? The difference is that Ryan Pace missed on, okay, two star quarterbacks. One, Deshaun Watson. Okay, the other one plays for the Kansas City Chiefs. You may know who he is. Okay, they evaluated them both. Traded up, moved mountains. Like, look, he did the Khalil Mack deal, which everybody thought, well, he overpaid for him. But the defense has been outstanding. They're still competitive with terrible quarterback play over the past 2 years. They've still been competitive. And you can tell me, oh, the NFC and more playoff, whatever. They have the same record as the Colts over the last three years, excuse me. And the only difference is a double doink, and then they have the same playoff record. But it's the perception that happens when you go all in for a quarterback and you miss. You take the wrong guy, and then somebody else takes the right guy, and he becomes a superstar. And Lamar Jackson's on the cover of Madden, and Pat Mahomes is on the cover of Madden and winning a Super Bowl and in another Super Bowl and all of this great stuff. I get what Kyle's doing. He's earned the right to do it. Everybody believes that he can evaluate, but better not miss.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you can get your podcast.
Do you like football? Do you like the NFL draft? Well, guess what? I have you covered on the Three and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff. I need you to go subscribe right now because we're talking the draft. We're talking Zach Wilson. We're talking Justin Fields. Mac Jones. Is he really going to go to the 49ers? I have it all covered. I used to scout in the NFL, and now I talk about football on the Three and Out podcast. Go subscribe right now.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd. Ron Rivera, Riverboat Ron, head coach of the Washington football team. I did find it funny, though, that do you remember a year ago, okay, before they changed their nickname, when there were people like, oh, they're going to make him sell the team because some minority owners are unhappy with their treatment. Okay, this little heads up to you. Knowing people who have been minority owners in the National Football League, there's really very little benefit from it. There just is. It's one of those things where you get to, you get the rights to purchase a suite before other people, but that's really about all you get, right? You get to say like, hey, we, but you don't get any say in the team. So if you thought Dan Snyder was selling and now he's buying those shares. And he's not buying them at the rate that which, if he ever sold the team, which he never will, it would actually be in terms of value because there's just not value in it. So Dan Snyder not selling and Riverboat Ron is not buying a quarterback. Quote, I say that just because if you put all the other pieces into place, now you start going forward. When that guy does show up, when that guy is in the right position, you can grab him. I went through it the other way. My first stint as head coach in Carolina, we drafted the guy of the future for us in the first round. At that point, we did not put all the other pieces around Cam Newton. Right? That's the, hey, we're going to draft a guy and then build a team around. That's kind of what the Jets tried to do with Sam Darnold. Yet they just never accumulated the pieces. Now the Jets are like, now we can get the pieces and the player. Or you could actually keep Sam Darnold. You could trade out of that place and you get even more pieces if you want it. But this is why Ron is doing, Riverboat Ron is doing what he's doing. He's like, look, so if you look at Washington, right, what do they have? How'd they make the playoffs? Their front four is filthy. Right, Chase Young is he's an incredible football player. Incredible. Like, I'm not going to say he and he alone got him to the playoffs. I would say that those four that front four, maybe front seven, like, they're as good as any, that front four is as good as anything out there. That won't win you a game. That'll keep you in a lot of games. And knowing that, he's like, why would I go and reach for a quarterback and try and, Ryan Fitzpatrick's fine. Taylor Heineke's fine. And without a guy who I know is a dude, I got so many other pieces. This is how I think a lot of NFL teams are going to be built. This appears to be what the Patriots are doing. Forget about the quarterback. Like, to get a free agent quarterback or even to get one that somebody wants to get rid of, you're going to pay $20, $30 million. Patriots are paying $3.5 million to Cam. Then maybe they draft a guy, or maybe they just stick with, and then they build the rest of the roster. Then when they find the guy, now you go for the guy, and you got everything else in place. You know, Russell Wilson wasn't the guy when he got to Seattle, but because of where they got him in the draft, they didn't have to pay him. And then they had the Legion of Boom. They built everything around him, and then he was successful. I think there's a lot of wisdom in what Riverboat Ron is saying. Don't just take quarterback because you need a quarterback. Only take quarterback if you know he's your quarterback. Otherwise, build your football team.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
I saw this from Todd McShay. I love the who else was there. So Mac Jones was throwing at Alabama's pro day the other day. And there's a bunch of different photos. There's lots of where Saban is, you know, talking with coaches, and you're like, man, Saban, whatever he's saying, just write it down. It's genius. And then there's some video of Belichick and Lynch and Shanahan all talking like, oh, they got to be talking about a Jimmy G trade. They got, like, it's possible. They're like, what have you guys been up to? Nothing. What have you been up to? Nothing. Can you believe that we're here in Alabama and we're watching Mac Jones? Like, never would have thought we're here for two. Right. Like, there's a million things they could be talking about. But KD and Kyrie, apparently, when they were talking in that hallway, were actually talking about playing together. So let's assume for a second that they were talking about changing quarterbacks. I gave you Jimmy G, and you want to get rid of him, clearly. Like, you give him back to me. So there's another guy who was there, Todd McShay. So So McShay, obviously, draft guru, ESPN. And in his latest mock draft, he said the Patriots go get the final Big Five quarterback. Quote, I'm not sure the Patriots would jump into the top 10 for a quarterback, but hopping four spots to one is very, very much a possibility. So in his latest mock, he has them trading with the Giants to get Justin Fields. He goes on to write, even after the Niners move up the board, it doesn't appear that Jimmy Garoppolo is in the cards this season for the Patriots. And while they brought back Cam Newton, the veteran is only signed to a $3.5 million guarantee. The Pats haven't spent a first-round pick on a quarterback since 93. That was Drew Bledsoe. But now's the time. Fields is an accurate downfield thrower. He can develop into a top-tier starter for a team searching for stability of the position in the post-Tom Brady era. I'm not going to tell you I even begin to know what Bill Belichick's doing. I can tell you, though, that if Cam Newton is only making $3.5 million, he's not going to be the starter for long. You understand? Right? He's not, which is about right. Like, Cam Newton can't throw a football very well. Oh, he's a league. Like, he can't. He had three games, and check to make sure I have the number right. I believe he had three games where he had less than 100 yards passing. And they won a couple of those games as well. And we can go back, well, they didn't have weapons. Like, okay, that's fine. But when you're throwing dirt balls, and you've had multiple shoulder surgeries, and the rest of the league is staying away. Like, look, he wouldn't have re-signed for 3.5 if he thought he's going to kill it somewhere else. Sorry, four games under 100. I actually undersold it. Under 100 yards passing. Now, he went 2-2 in those games. They won in spite of, not because of, his arm. So Cam Newton's not the future. He's not really even the present there. He's just a good dude, good, very well respected. But here's my thing. We've all followed the draft. Colin follows the draft incredibly tightly. So do I. We talk to the same people. And every year a rumor comes up about an athletic quarterback that Bill Belichick has a thing for, right? Do you remember? I mean, look, when Lamar Jackson was out, the team that people thought was going to jump up and take Lamar Jackson was, in fact, the Patriots. Because part of it is we always go with the opposite, right? He had a statue and an absolute genius in Brady, but the league has changed. So some of it is the league changing, but some of it is I'd like to know how the other half lives. Have a guy who can run. Have a guy who can, if things don't work out, he can make it happen with his legs. We can move the pocket. We can move him all over. There's just no athletic limitations. And if you go back and track the Patriots rumored drafted quarterback, almost all of them are guys that, and I know they drafted Ryan Mallett, who wasn't a runner, and I know they drafted Jared Stidham, who can run, but is not a runner, and they had Jimmy Garoppolo, who was more athletic before the injuries, whatever. But the rumors recently have all been Belichick wants somebody who's athletic. Justin Fields ran a 4.4 yesterday. Now, I know Urban's not there anymore, but if you look at the programs that Belichick has trusted the most, Urban Meyer's program at Florida and Ohio State, and Greg Schiano's program at Rutgers, like those are his guys, and now and Alabama as well. Like those are the three, you know. Saban has the Parcells tie. He's got the Parcells tie. That's where it all kind of comes together. Does it make sense? Absolutely. Absolutely. Also, if you're going to have Cam Newton as your starter at the start of the year, it would stand to reason that whoever comes and ultimately replaces him would run a similar offense, right? Cam Newton's not going to run an offense that's West Coast. He's going to run one where it emphasizes his ability to throw it, but also emphasizes his ability to run it. They didn't get big pass-catching tight ends because they were going to get a deadly, accurate, you know, guy with a pea shooter for an arm. No, you're going to get somebody like Cam Newton with a howitzer for an arm that may lack some of the technical accuracy. All of this is Justin Fields. Makes sense to me. Makes sense to me. But that doesn't mean Belichick is committed. I'm just saying, for the longest time, Belichick has seen how, and what's the other thing? He's seen how the league has gone. Right, the sweet spot for building a roster is with a young quarterback, especially one's second, third, fourth year of their deal. You get somebody mid-first round, they're making $7, $8 million. You combine that with the $3.5 million he's paying for Cam, that's a reasonable sum of money. And you can go in and, as they've done in free agency, and as I told you they would do on this very show a couple weeks ago, I said, hey, free agency, nobody else has money except for the Pats. This is how they're going to rebuild their team. They got a bunch of young guys from last year. They got guys come back off opt-out, and they're going to go spend smartly in free agency and try and fix it then and worry about the quarterback later. And this would be the quarterback later. This would be the quarterback later. Coming up next, does John Middlecoff think the Patriots should trade up to get their new franchise QB? Plus, are the Niners really taking Mac Jones, and does he fit Shanahan well enough to be taken that highly in the draft?
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
If I say Gonzaga, there's like two guys that come to mind. Two guys. One would be Dan Dickow. The other would be Adam Morrison. Fair? Okay. When I say UCLA, obviously there's historic players. When I say UCLA and Gonzaga, you're like, oh, Adam Morrison. God, that was rough. That was in Oakland, right? So UCLA and Gonzaga are going to play in the Final Four tomorrow. We just so happen to be lucky enough to get Adam Morrison to join us here in the Herd on Fox Sports Radio. Adam, first, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. It's interesting, you know. Your college career was amazing. You were kind enough to do that pod with me. By the way, it's All Ball. You can download the podcast. Adam took us through kind of everything. But no matter all the awards and all of the points and the 28 a game and the dominating college basketball, you're forever known for that game. What do you remember about the game in Oakland in 2006?
I think I remember obviously we were up 15 with about 5 minutes to go, and a lot of things had to go right for UCLA, and they did. And I still will go to my grave thinking that JP Batista got fouled on that steal, because he was an 85% free throw shooter. So when I passed it to him on that double team, we were expecting him to get fouled. Unfortunately, they stole the ball and laid it up, and then, the rest was history for me. So, it's funny. I was sitting on our broadcast because, I do the games for Gonzaga, and I mentioned in our post-game show, I was like, man, I really hope Michigan wins so I don't have to relive this thing over again. And unfortunately for myself, UCLA came through, and it's going to be an interesting matchup on Saturday.
Okay, so do you want them to, they get up 15, do you want them to sweep the leg and just run it up and go for it? Because, common practice is, AAU, you get up 25, you're like, all right, call off the dogs. You want them to sweep the leg and just, hey, listen, 15 is not enough, boys.
It was 15 years ago, obviously, for me, and, Fuey and the staff have elevated the program beyond that, obviously. So, obviously I want us to win. These kids have had such a fantastic season, but it's just so funny. It just morphs into UCLA coming from first four and making out of that bracket. A blowout. We've won by 24 in every game this tournament, so a blowout wouldn't be surprising, but UCLA is playing with house money. Obviously very good, very, very good team with Ju Zhang. I like that kid. He's good too. And I think I like that little point guard, Campbell. It's good. So we'll see. It should be an interesting matchup.
Yeah, Tiger Campbell looks straight out of a Rasta poster back from my college days, right? Doesn't he? It's really, really amazing. The hair, the look, the whole thing. There is definitely some Rasta swag there.
Oh, absolutely. A little Bob Marley, and it's everything's legalized now, so it's okay to have that mindset. But he did a fantastic job keeping those Michigan guards out of the paint. So I think that's going to be one of the keys when we play him, is how that matchup between him and Suggs and our other guards go. If we can get into the paint, it'll be good for us. But if he can keep us out of the paint, it'll be a little more difficult offensively.
There's, and I don't know, do you guys have a text chain with all of the Santangelos, the Richie Froms, the Dickows, the Casey Cavalrys? Are you on that text chain?
No, not really. Those guys were before me.
I know.
So, you know, they're kind of the era that started it all. So they had more success as a group than my groups did. So they're kind of, in my view, they're held in higher regard as far as Gonzaga standing. So, no, I don't really talk about the games with them, I guess. But
I guess the question, Adam, is this: like, if they win on Monday night, is it? Do you guys all feel, or do you personally feel like a part of it? Right? Like, and I know Few has done a great job. Do you feel a part of it?
In a minute sense, you know, as far as helping the program, I guess, you know, with those Elite Eight runs and then my group, you know, elevating it to a national prominence, I guess you could say. But, you know, during this whole season and then obviously the UCLA game coming up, I kind of feel bad because some of the attention goes back to that last game in my era. And it's like these kids are, you know, 30-0 and are a fantastic basketball team. So I think all of us will feel a little bit you know, like we've done a little bit for the program, but these guys have taken it to a whole different level. They're so much better than our older teams. And I don't like even saying that, but it's the truth. They just play a better brand. They're better players coming out of high school. And, you know, they've taken the program to heights that a lot of us didn't think it could go. So we're all proud of them for real. And it's time for us to get shoved off the Mount Rushmore of Gonzaga and put these guys up there if they can win on Monday.
Plus, Drew Timmy's facial hair was much better than your facial hair. Let's just be honest.
His handlebar mustache is such more ingrown than mine was. Mine was wispy and tough, you know, tough to look at when I look back and show my kids of my playing days. I usually show them the freshman and sophomore year highlight tapes and skip the junior year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, listen, I had a little chin thing going on there too for a while in college. Mm-hmm. And I did the frosted tips 1 year, start of a year before my coach.
Made me.
Yeah. And you're just like, God, what was I doing? Whereas Timmy, I felt like Timmy took the matchup with Evan Mobley personally. Like, I thought am I wrong? Because he's like, not only do I want to kick his ass because I normally like to kick guys' asses, but people think he's a top five draft pick. Like, I'm a sophomore.
Yep.
And he just went right at him.
Well, I think it was a huge game for his stock, for Timmy, if he, you know, chooses to leave this year or next year. He had to go against an NBA type body, an NBA athlete inside single coverage. And we really haven't faced that this year. I mean, he's had great games in the tournament, but he hasn't played an NBA body. And so he, you know, came out with the right mindset. And he was really good defensively on the perimeter. I mean, he started the game with two steals and kind of got him going in transition. So, yeah, he really took it to heart, I think, and you know, understood. It was kind of like the Domas Sabonis Jakob Poeltl game when they said Jakob Poeltl was a better player than Domas was about 5-6 years ago in the tournament. Same situation, and Domas took it personally. Draft stock, I think Timmy had the same mindset of, all right, I need to really show the next level that I have a chance to play at that level. So he did an excellent job of kind of dominating the whole interior of that game.
You know, it's interesting. Adam Morrison's our guest. I'm Doug Gottlieb in for Colin Cowherd. This is the Herd on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app. It's interesting that I feel that, like, there's a competitiveness to the program that is real, right? Where and most places have that, right? Where you're like, oh, that guy's something. Wait, let me show him. But there's kind of competitive dudes there. What's interesting, it's not that Fewey's not competitive, but, you know, like, if he loses on Saturday, he'll be super bummed and upset for the kids. But then it'll be fly fishing like 2 days later. Like, he has a balance about it. Because a program usually is, looks like the head coach, right? Feels like the head coach. But Mark appears to be one of the nicest, genuine, calmest human beings on earth. And yet you guys have these vicious competitors. How does that balance take place?
Well, I think, you know, with Fewey is he's going to coach you, but you're never going to get MF'd or anything like that. So that's first and foremost when you come in. So, you know, he's going to get on you. He's going to, you know, teach you the right ways to play and make sure he's, you know, he always says squeezing the last 5% out of you as far as the players go. So I think he recruits guys that are, you know, culture guys. But then he has a pretty good lifestyle, and it's not, there's not, you know, there's pressure, but there's not a lot of pressure like a football school or Power Five conference to where, you know, you have to produce, which he always does. So I think he just has a calmness over the program. But a lot of it has to do with the guys they recruit. I mean, it sounds cliche, but he recruits culture guys. He recruits guys that are gym rats. He recruits basketball first oriented guys that are, you know, want to make something of their career. And then especially in the older days, we were all kind of diamonds in the rough or overlooked type of players. And he's kept that same attitude with how he recruits. And yeah, no, he's done an excellent job of morphing himself into a different, you know, mindset as a coach. I mean, he was a little more intense, I think, when I was there. Now he's a little more laid back. I think going to USA Basketball really helped him, being around like Boeheim and Pop and those guys, and seeing how they're around five-star recruits, you know what I mean, and dudes. And so he's taken that mindset and really morphed it into the program. And, you know, now they're getting five-star recruits. They got that kid out of Omaha. We might get that Chet kid, hopefully. You know, we're getting dudes now, and Jalen Suggs. And so he's done an excellent job of kind of pulling the reins back on his intensity, I think, in the last decade or so.
Yeah, if he gets Chet Holmgren, that it's a wrap. Gonzaga's officially become Kentucky, right? Like, I mean lining up, Jalen Suggs, you obviously played and played well in the NBA. You know, you've been a part of championship teams. I remember the story you told me about Kobe and how great he was to you. Jalen Suggs, the NBA comp for you as a guy who's actually played against these all-time greats. Is he Jason Kidd? Like, who is he?
That's a good question, because I've battled that myself in my own head. I first was thinking Bradley Beal, but I don't think he scores it well enough. But I think he's similar to Jason Kidd at passing. I think he's a better scorer than maybe Jason Kidd was, but Jason Kidd didn't have to score in his era at that position. So I think that's probably a fair comp. What's been most impressive for me with him coming to Gonzaga is he, you know, he could have gone anywhere, obviously. He could have gone to football as well, but he went to Gonzaga to play with other good players and play in the system. And there's been games this year where he's only had 5, 6, 7 shots, but he has 8, 9 assists. And usually you get those type of kids, if they don't get the numbers or get the line that they wanted, the parents start complaining or the kid's body language is bad. We haven't seen that at all from him. He's been fantastic defensively. I mean, the last game against USC was 16-10-8. I'm really impressed with him as a passer more than anything else. But I think he has a tremendous upside in the pros, because they play pro style and he handles it really well, and, you know, space the floor, ball screen with motion and reads and back cuts and stuff like that, and can shoot it. So I think Jason Kidd is a good comp with a little bit better jump shot and finish around the rim.
Adam, great stuff, man. Look, I know obviously, like, nobody, I discussed it earlier, nobody likes to pick apart like one spot of a guy's life and career, but that's unfortunately that's what people are going to do. Emotionally, you gonna be good Saturday when they start showing all those re-airs, those highlights?
Yeah, no, I'm fine. I put that stuff to bed, honestly, about 10 years ago. But if you asked me five years after, I probably would have declined the interview. So it's just funny, because I knew it was coming up, and I appreciate you guys having me on and stuff like that. But I was just like, oh, man, I just want for these kids, they don't have to talk about my career 15 years later when they're, you know, 30-0 and about have a chance to win national championship. So it is what it is, but, you know, life goes on, and, you know, there's worse things to be remembered by than being emotional at the end of a loss, I guess.
No question about it. You show me somebody who doesn't cry when they lose. I say, I'm like, I like guys that cry when I cry when I lost my last college game.
Yeah.
Like a baby.
Yeah, no.
Like a baby. I can still remember every moment of it, right? Every moment of it I can remember.
Yeah. High school, it was the same way. We lost the state championship in the locker room. It was a tear fest with everybody. I mean, I was watching, you know, obviously the tournament, Alabama on the sideline. Those kids were emotional in that loss to UCLA in overtime. So, yeah, it happens. And people don't understand. It's like you know, I was from Spokane. There was a ball boy there. So it was like one of those deals where, you know, kind of had the pressure on the city as well and to fall up short, because we were going to play Memphis, who we lost to earlier in that season, and we felt good about that matchup. And then, you know, like I said, we were up 15 with about 5 minutes to go, and about 10 things had to go right for UCLA, and they all did. You know, Ryan Hollins makes a one-on-one free throw. Jordan Farmar makes a 17-foot running bank shot, who was one of my teammate in L.A., and he always laughs. He's like, I don't know how I made that. Yeah, so it is what it is, and life goes on. And, you know, if it didn't happen, you know, maybe my life's a little bit different as far as how people remember me. But, you know, like I said, because it did happen, I'm on the Herd, you know, so we got to talk about Gonzaga basketball. So there's some pros and cons to it, I guess.
No question. I'm actually watching it. When you lose, is there any recollection of anything that happened elsewhere? By the way, like, here's a crazy one. You guys were up three and you missed a shot, and you did it right? Held to the last second, missed a shot. And then there was a bizarre, like, foul call on JP with 19 points. They didn't get fouled going to the basket. They got fouled in their own end.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, like I said, there was so many things that had to go right. The biggest regret I have from that game is that last possession. I think I got a switch on a guard. I think it was Farmar.
Yes.
Collison. I should have bounced him down and tried to get to the free throw line or take them better. I took like a fadeaway, like a 14-footer or something. That's the one regret when I remember back, is I probably should have put my head down, and because I had a good whistle that whole year, and try to get to the free throw line and score, and you know, maybe we move on. But you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. Gonzaga wins the national title if.
We get out in transition. I mean, if we can limit Juzang in this next game, and I think if Campbell, you know, we can kind of try to get him off the floor, because I thought he was fantastic defensively. But, you know, we're number one in the country in two-point field goal percentage. We're 72% at the rim. And then 34% of our shots have been in transition as a whole. So if we can get out and run, I think we're going to be fine. That USC game scared me with that 2-3 zone. But early in the game, we got out and ran and got out in transition and scored at will. So if we can gang rebound like we've been doing and get out in transition, I think we have as good a shot as anybody.
Adam, you're a good man for coming on, for talking about this stuff. You've always been good to me personally. And, of course, I love calling your games back in the day. Can't wait to catch up in person, maybe with the Zags as national champions. And thanks for being our guest on Fox Sports Radio.
Cool. Thanks, Doug.
All right, it's Adam Morrison. And I encourage you to do this, right? You should download that podcast, not just because it was a really good podcast, but it's like he walks you through, like, that emotionally scars you for a long time. I don't know if you have had this in your life, but, you know, in my life, we didn't lose a close game my last game. It got close. We played Florida. It was in the Elite Eight. And we wanted to play Duke, because our sophomore years, we had lost to Duke, and they were really young. Jay Williams was just a freshman, and so was Dunleavy. That team that went on to win a national championship, I think the next year, they were freshmen mostly that year. And you know, what ended up happening was we played Florida instead, and Florida was crazy talented. And we got down early. We came back. We tied the game. And then Mike Miller hit a couple of threes, and that was that. And but you wake up the morning of the Elite Eight, and you just, I'm going to be cutting down nets. I'm going to go to the Final Four. I'd gone to the Final Four my entire life as a kid. My dad was a coach. And then all of a sudden, now I'm not going to the Final Four. It's over like that. So, yeah, of course, I remember Adam crying on the court, and they still had, you know, 2 seconds or so to get off a shot. And they actually got up a decent shot. But like that, it just kind of emotionally scars you, you know, emotionally scars you. And when you're a person who's fully and completely invested, and that's the only way you're successful in this thing, is if guys are completely invested in doing it and winning. When you're completely invested in something, you don't think the possibility of losing. Plus, they had a big lead. So I do get it.